I'm curious. I'm just going to start recording, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, maybe I will, too.
Yeah, why not? Right.
I might have to run in the middle of this episode. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, that's fine. Yeah, I might have to get up in the middle of this episode, too. So this episode might only be 10 minutes long.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Beep Beep Lettuce. This is a 10-minute long podcast that we made.
That's right.
We're trying to fit you into our very busy schedules, but you're important to us.
Yeah, and we've decided that due to unforeseen circumstances, the one-hour-a-week podcast will now be 2 10-minute episodes per day with Sundays off.
Your pod is important to us.
So fun.
Please stay on the line.
Do you think people would listen to that?
I don't know.
We were like up first, but for weed, or like the daily, but for weed?
Yeah. Good morning. Yeah,
well, maybe. I don't know. I feel like you couldn't be as political as we are. You couldn't like get into really long form like sidetrack shit. You would have to be like, hello and welcome to the weed show. We're going to talk about like these three news items and we're going to fucking blitz through them.
Mm-hmm.
And like we would try to record 10-minute episodes. They'd all be a half hour long.
Absolutely.
Anyway. Yeah.
And be like, all right, I have to go. I really have to go.
Yeah, but one more take I got to get out there. Yeah, we'd end up being the Weed Daily Show.
Did you just see about Peru? Did you just see about Peru?
breaking news coming in today. It's like breaking news comes in every day. Like, you can wait till tomorrow.
Yeah.
This old lady got bit by an alligator.
Yeah.
Got to talk about it.
We're just like scraping the bottom of the barrel like we're a late night show. And we're like, we got a Pomeranian who plays ping pong, I guess.
You hear about these folks?
Yeah. Squirrel on jet skis. Jamie, can you bring up our news of the weird on the monitors over there?
Yeah, just scrolling our what the fuck for 10 minutes.
What the fuck, dude? We can't talk about this. This is too fucked up even for our show.
Yeah, this Moving is even on. For our show.
This stupid. Is beyond fucked up.
The show that's called What the Fuck in 10 Minutes.
Yeah, aren't there already like 10 podcasts called like WTF? With mm-hmm. such and such host, or like the WTF
Mark
show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that is called? I hate him. He's such a fucking annoying piece of shit. Yeah. I don't have anything in particular against him. I know there was some controversy. I don't remember what it was. I just don't like him as a performer. I think he's annoying.
Mm. Mark Maron, I think, is an okay performer. Not annoying, but like definitely not special.
Mm-hmm.
But what it made me hate him was back in, I don't know, 2009 or something,
mm-hmm,
when
mm-hmm.
he excuse me, back in 2010 or 11 or something, when he had Obama on his show.
Oh, yeah.
It was like one of the worst interviews I'd ever heard.
You listened to the whole thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
This was back when there was nothing going
right
for communists.
You were like, well, like, I could listen to another majority report.
You could listen to the majority report and you could listen to the Daily Show.
Oof.
And yeah, like, that's rough. That's a rough landscape.
Yeah.
I was just like, I was just like reading Zizek, like eating Dorito crumbs out of the couch. You know what I mean?
As you do.
Yeah.
Just starving.
Please, can I have one small crumb of communist commentary?
A crumb of ideology, Zizek.
Well, what was so stupid about it? Just like a terrible.
Oh, it's just like, what was really hard about, like, you know, I bet it was really hard starting drone war. You know, it was like, there was nothing, like, nothing about really holding his to task. I mean, like, the concept of a hardball interview was like, I don't know, not even really on the table anymore.
But it's really long,
like,
right? It's like
2 hours.
His episodes
long.
Are all like really long interviews when he talks to people. Yeah, the idea of just like talking to a war criminal for 2 hours and you're like,
and just being like, you're so cool, dude.
This is crazy.
Yeah, welcome
dude.
Back to What the Fuck with Mark Maron, man. I got fucking Kissinger on. It's gonna be such a good show.
I'm so excited.
I'm pretty sure they've had Kissinger on the Colbert Report at some point.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. If not him, like, I know. I think he has been on. Like, if you look back at the guests for those shows, it's like half of them are just some like Natsec ghoul who like wrote a new book about dropping
Kissinger
bombs.
Kissinger was really hot back then. He was coming off of season 2 of Glow. He was really in demand.
Yeah, he was.
I mean,
yeah.
Mark Maron. I can't get off the Mark Maron train right now because he pisses me off so bad. He's just like a Robert Downey Jr. He's just a self insert for like Gen X and Boomer guys who think they're cooler than they are and wish they were richer. Like, that's it.
That like, that does seem very accurate. Like, his whole like sort of self effacing, like, I think I would hate myself if I could muster more energy to do so, feels like the ultimate sort of like Gen X, like aging slacker mindset.
Yeah. It's like, oh yeah, I would like to be upset and like cynical and jaded and depressed, but everything's worked out my way my entire life. So I got to put up this weird front that doesn't feel authentic at all, you know?
Yeah. Oh, wow. You're right. It is like that. Mm-hmm. I'm also realizing that this is like a type of guy that I'm attracted to.
Oh, interesting.
That I like always get annoyed at, but I do, yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
Well, I feel like Marc Maron is also that too. Like, he's bait for all of like the moms out there who are like, I wish my husband had a better mustache. Like,
but he's not like hot or anything, but he's definitely the type of guy who's like, he plays guitar, but he's like, he was in a grunge band when he was in college, but he's a little older than me, but he's right. Like, he's got his shit together now, but like all of the aesthetic stuff that you were into when you were in your 20s or younger right. is still there.
He has like a nice apartment and a fancy car and a good job, but he still gives off the vibes of a guy who lives in a treehouse behind his friend's actual
right.
house.
Right. And he like likes and he like likes Mudhoney and the meat puppets and stuff.
You know what I mean? He's Fred Armisen is what you're saying.
Mm. Yeah, basically. I'm sure if I just went to the Pacific Northwest once, I'd get over this.
Yeah, yeah. You'd look around and it's just like the clones of that guy would be everywhere. They'd yeah, be like yeah, at the yeah. Enterprise rental place and at the coffee place working at the airport.
But it's funny, you know, because like
welcome to Avis Budget Rental, man. Do you want to check out my drum set? Like,
but my upbringing, you know, my like introduction to movies and like what was cool when I was a kid was all that guy was like, you right. know, Richard Linklater and, you know, the guys mm-hmm. in the Kevin Smith movies and just
90s
like,
and early 2000s guys. They were trying to be the opposite of the 80s guy, right? It like yeah. instead of like suits and cocaine, it was like flannel shirts, torn jeans, you know, mm-hmm. weed, possibly hard drugs. Like, you know, there was like a and they're like it's like you said earlier, Chris, there's this weird like self-effacing like, oh, I'm not really that special, but I know saying that makes you all pay attention to me, so like I'm going to keep saying it. Like,
well, it was a super it was such an interesting thing because it was at, you know, at least in retrospect it feels so obvious that it was like the entire thing of the 80s, like all of the cultural touchstones were like artifice, and it was like mm-hmm. the 90s was the first moment it seemed where it was like I want to get in touch with something that doesn't feel like artifice, and I literally have no idea what that means.
Right. Well, I mean, in a lot of ways, like grunge and like early 90s culture in general did offer like in a weird reordered way, but it did offer some kind of access to like the trauma of real cultural experience, right? Something that the 70s and 80s had completely tried to like mm-hmm. smooth out and ignore, especially the 80s where everything was like turned up. It was neon. It was heavily saturated. Songs were about like having the best time of your life and shit. And then the early 90s came around and everybody was, you know, this just makes me think Kurt Cobain should have shot Marc Maron. Okay.
There you go.
That's the move right there.
Yeah. Kurt Cobain would never do a long rambling interview with Obama. He would take him to task.
Kurt Cobain exactly. was a Marxist. Mm.
Yeah. I think you mean Courtney Love should have shot Marc Maron, John.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think Courtney Love killed it.
Yeah, I actually don't know anything about that conspiracy theory.
She's mean and a weirdo, but I don't think she's a murderer.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's like, you know, I spent how many hours trying to learn about JFK and who really killed him. I don't have room in my brain to be like, who killed JonBenet Ramsey, who killed Kurt Cobain. It's just fun to like pick a conspiracy theory and run with it.
Well, I'm an Elliot Smith truther. I don't even care for Elliot Smith's music.
Oh my God,
but nobody stabs themselves repeatedly in the chest.
Twice?
That's not
are
possible.
You really like, oof, that one didn't take. Let me just take this out and line it up again. And there we go.
There's
now
a
I'm
reason,
really dead.
There's a reason like medieval knights or whatever, if they were like disgraced, would go fall on their sword. Because like mm-hmm. that's the kind of action that it takes to commit to that shit. You don't just kneel over in the kitchen with a fucking knife and be like, whoopsie daisy, gotta go for two.
Yeah, are you fucking
about
kidding
that
me?
Story is that the girlfriend, Elliot Smith's girlfriend, and I'm sorry, Elliot Smith's girlfriend, I hope you're not listening to this, but I am accusing you of murder, but she doesn't have an alibi.
Oh no.
Like,
oh,
really? In her story, she's in the apartment, she was just in the shower.
She just like heard him fall over or
she
something?
She was just like, I was in the shower and he stabbed himself twice.
Oh, God.
I mean, Jesus.
It's like,
how much would that suck, though, if that's what happened?
I like, know. I mean, it's awful. Yeah. That's what the thing. It's just like,
I mean, you
know.
I was just in the shower yesterday and I accidentally stabbed Marc Maron twice.
Damn, congratulations.
Yeah, Lee Harvey Oswald just like all pruned up and he's like, look, I was showering the whole time in the book depository. I don't know what you people want from me.
Lee Harvey Oswald's wife actually killed JFK.
Yeah.
Marina, you're going to friend. I'm just a patsy. Well, you know, it's really sad about the, I think if there's one generation I feel the worst for, it's Gen X. It's just because it was like kind of the most like dying gasp of trying to find anything of value in American culture.
Just blindly grappling in the dark, hoping your hand brushes up against some authenticity at some point.
Like, yeah, exactly. Just like, is that? Because I think it was the first, like, quote unquote, generation that really understood the fact that we were in a hole that was like designed by a state that like, there was like, realizing that you're in the dark and there's fake walls all around you and you're like, I don't know what's happening. I feel like our generation fully understands that we're in a cage. You know, like we get it and we're like, okay, we can either accept that or fight against it. But like Gen X is sadly sort of just like, what's happening?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like I feel like Gen X was there like when Beck recorded like spray paint the vegetables, dog food stalls with the beefcake pantyhose. The Gen Xers were like, I intuitively feel that. Like, I feel that, but I don't understand what it means. And now us enlightened millennials and Zoomers are able to come along and be like, well, actually, that means that, like, the socioeconomic conditions that produce our current society are so esoteric and difficult to grapple with that we're operating on such a profound layer of alienation that this last gasp towards authenticity was doomed from the start.
Right.
That's what Beck was saying to you. Like, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Beck. Very cool.
Yeah. I mean, we are tortured and cursed with the understanding of what the society we're in is.
Yeah, we have become the idiot god.
Yeah, because of the internet.
There will always be another middle manager idiot god right above you.
Mm-hmm. Like, I wonder
speaking of conspiracy theories, I got one for you.
Okay.
The New York Times is reporting that the press plane for Biden's G7 summit was held up by quote unquote cicadas. And that the cicadas were creating such a disturbance that Joe Biden almost didn't get to go to Cornwall and the press plane had to be delayed. A little convenient.
All right.
He's been harping on this. You shouldn't eat the bugs. This is a real reason you shouldn't eat the bugs.
Because they get everywhere.
Yeah. There's all these articles that were like foodies are salivating at the thought of all the cicadas they could soon eat.
I'm sorry, what?
You didn't
see
those?
They're not wild mushrooms. They're not ramps. You don't go out and pick up cicadas and be like, ooh, what a lovely North American delicacy.
Cicada season.
Bug in your mouth. I would eat fucking bug protein paste or whatever if it was produced, you know, not by Tyson chicken, but I'm not gonna go eat a cicada out of the woods. I'm sorry.
They're just trying to get you to take like a little fork out in the woods and stab them and roast them over a campfire and like feel like you're doing something.
Cicadas actually want to be eaten. They're like an apple. Okay, the seeds are on the inside and they come out in your poop. Like,
oh god,
look at their juicy little thoraxes.
No thanks.
So okay, I've definitely seen. I haven't been on the internet as much. I've definitely seen some memes about cicadas this week. I did not know it was because of this. Is it because that they attacked Joe Biden?
No, I think it's just because this is like when one of the biggest broods of cicadas is doing their like 7-year cycle, which I looked up if this part of West Michigan that I'm in was going to be affected. And it said yes, but I haven't seen or heard a goddamn cicada yet. So I'm a little disappointed.
I love cicada sounds. It's a cool vibe. But I like the way they sound.
I mean, they're so funny, but in some places of the country, they really do get incredibly loud. Like in one of the articles I was reading, they were saying that, was it Roosevelt, who was like known for having a booming voice, was almost unable to give a presidential speech back in the day because of those cicada sounds.
Wow.
Which is just like, comrade cicadas, you know, fucking way to go.
Yeah, shut that motherfucker up. That guy sucks. So was he able to go to the G7 summit?
I think Biden himself, his plane was able to take off, Air Force One or whatever, but Air Force 420, the press plane, was unfortunately grounded. And now the
wait
press-
a minute. It's the press plane that didn't get to go. So he's like, oh, no, now I'm running around in Europe for a day with no reporters to see what I'm doing.
Oh, and just
I don't know about that.
The cicadas made a fucko wucko, and now the press can't follow me to Cornwall for the incredibly, you know, the incredibly important summit that's going to tackle things like economic and inequality and climate change in an area disproportionately affected by economic inequality and climate change.
Yeah, where no country that experiences that on the whole is invited.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're gonna go fucking vacation in a conquered Celtic nation that England won't give any fucking money to, and talk about how to give money to poor people, you know, or not, maybe not.
Definitely not.
How to think about doing it, maybe.
Yeah, well, how to form a committee to consider having a G8 summit.
Yeah, I would never eat a bug. I feel like it's very annoying to me that that has become some sort of meme about elites or whatever. You should just never eat bugs anyway.
And I mean, I've eaten bugs before and enjoyed it. My aunt, who lives out in the woods, she gets chocolate covered ants sometimes, and they're right. Delicious.
But that's what I'm saying, is that you're gross, and anybody who's out there posting that shit on Twitter and then eating crabs and eating lobsters, you're disgusting.
Yeah, here's some of the headlines.
You're a hypocrite.
Got a couple headlines for you here, Bryn. The cicadas are coming and foodies are getting ready to feast. For foodie thrill seekers, cicadas add crunch and protein to lunch.
No.
The Brood X cicadas are now the buzziest food trend. Ew, this is just like a picture of one cicada on a plate.
Don't show me
this
that.
This is the most disgusting way to do this. Like, I mean, you wouldn't just put like a whole chicken on a plate and be like, yeah, this is what people love to eat.
Honestly,
an entire chicken.
Put a whole chicken on a plate, like a roasted chicken. Mm-hmm. I can't eat that.
It's a little weird looking. It's like, oh, this is just a carcass,
I'm
like arranged up in a thing. Yeah.
See, I like that kind of stuff. Like when I was growing up, my family would have these reunions and they would like spit roast a whole pig. You know what I mean? Like you could just walk up and like, you're like, yeah, that was definitely a live pig, like recently.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. Like it tasted so good. And I think as a kid, like, maybe if you're exposed to it young enough,
yeah,
you can just like bypass the trauma of it, or like compartmentalize it properly. But like now, I think like if an animal that I wasn't used to seeing like that, like if you were like, we're going to spit roast a horse, I'd be like, hey, I don't know about that one, chief.
This is weird. Yeah, I think that's true, is that it's like most people because most people eat meat as kids, but you like see it as like a burger or a chicken nugget or like whatever, a pork chop. And then if you see a whole dead animal, even if it's cooked, you're like, ooh, that looks a little weird now that I'm seeing it like that. I don't know how I feel about that one.
Yeah, this is why the shawarma guys had the right idea, right? You don't do the whole animal, just a big cone section of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right? You make it into a pyramid of meat. Yeah, because like, who doesn't like a good pyramid?
I'll eat an animal that's so large that any one piece of it that I can see at one time doesn't look like a whole animal.
So
like
you eat our beloved friends the whale, Bryn. Interesting. Our beautiful smart friends.
I don't think I would want to eat a whale. That's all blubbery.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, so is octopus, and they're incredibly intelligent, and I eat octopus. Like, it's good.
No, don't eat the octopus. Too smart. I can't. They're, honestly, octopus is so delicious, but I refuse to eat it. I can't eat it. It tastes like delicious cheese.
I mean, they're like more intelligent than like parrots and shit, but they're so good.
If they're really so smart, they should have tasted worse, honestly.
Yeah.
It's really good. Don't eat it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they're so smart, why don't they douse themselves in something that's not food safe? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Why don't they be poisonous?
Yeah. Make the ink poisonous so you can't eat them.
Yeah. Well, anyway, shout out to the cicadas for fucking up Joe Biden's day.
But maybe not. Maybe making his day.
Or maybe making his day.
Providing a convenient excuse.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein all of a sudden in Cornwall, but no reporters were here to see it.
Don't ask why Jeffrey Epstein is still alive.
This is his brother, Beffrey Bepstein. They have different last names, too. Don't ask any questions about it.
Beffrey Bepstein.
Speaking of not asking any questions about anything, Apparently, after the online release of a major investigation by ProPublica based on over 15 years of confidential information from the Internal Revenue Service showing that the wealthiest Americans often pay little to no federal income tax, the agency's commissioner, Charles Rettig, told lawmakers that internal and external investigators are working to determine whether the data ProPublica used was illegally obtained. And the implication of that is that if it was illegally obtained, the IRS is simply going to sue people for revealing that billionaires paid no money. They're going to Julian Assange, the fucking journalist, Assange. My friend.
My name is Julian Assange.
That's how Heem said it in a song once, and that's how I'm going to say it for the rest of time.
Oh, wow. IRS commissioner warns of prosecution of bombshell tax. Oh, wow. But
yeah, they're saying, like, if you expose billionaires, like, corrupt trade secrets and open IRS secrets, like, that they don't pay taxes and that they haven their money in, like, offshore, you know, tax accounts, then that's grounds to sue you. And not just to sue you, but for the IRS itself to sue you. Which is, like, I didn't know, like, this is like watching Ghostbusters and being like, the EPA can't effectively shut down businesses.
Like, yeah, it's weird that it's like, not only can the IRS like fail to like enforce anything, like, you know, like even what's on the books, right? Because it's like, if you're really rich, you're supposed to be paying a lot of taxes. And it's like, actually, they paid almost nothing. And also, if you reveal that, then you're in big trouble.
Right. Well, and then the IRS, it's like, isn't it your job, you know, on paper or whatever, to make sure that these people are paying their taxes, not to go to court for them when they don't?
Well, okay. So to be clear, there was a big article that we also didn't talk about, right? That came out in ProPublica that was like this really crazy, like, big reveal. But I feel like we didn't talk about it, and I didn't really even tweet, like, I didn't see anybody really caring about it because everyone knows this.
Yeah. Panama Papers came out like right before we started the show, like three or four years ago.
As a matter of fact, we almost called this show Panama Rolling Papers.
That's
but
right.
We were afraid no one would understand what we were talking about.
Especially once enough time passed. So we went with a coherent title like Beep Beep.
That's right.
Signifies nothing, so it signifies everything.
Yeah.
That's right.
But that's the thing, is that, like, the Panama Papers, the Pentagon, you know, like, we've kind of all understood that the wealthy are not paying taxes, that they are one of the reasons that the Fed has to, you know, start inflation. And, like, you know, the way this works is not unclear to everybody. And so when these sorts of evidence comes out, there's this weird, like, hyper-normalization of it where it's just like, yeah, okay, so what? What are you going to do about it? You know what I mean? Like, and the problem I think we all understand is that no one's going to do anything about it because all the people in power created this situation that the rich people are the state as much as the IRS is the state. And so when they react this way, they're like, hey, you leaked our information. And we'll sue you for it. It's not surprising because everyone already knows that.
Well, and like the IRS probably thinks about the biggest billionaires in the country like it's fucking clients, you know?
Literally.
Like, yeah.
These are just people who we're friendly with and that we're going to, like, I'm going to go play golf or whatever with Bezos next week anyway. So,
Yeah.
Yeah, like I feel like the idea of suing people for revealing this information, it's like, it sort of makes me think of the way that, like, the past few years, there's like more and more people who are like, the police don't like enforce any kind of justice, they're just violent thugs, and then have big protests where they're like, police are violent, and police are like, oh, okay, we'll be violent towards you because you said that. Like, the contradictions keep heightening, and like, there's more understanding of the contradictions, but that doesn't mean yet that anything changes. It just kind of means that, like, the people in power sort of like reveal themselves and reveal, like, how little you're allowed to even acknowledge, like, the bad things that they do.
I think there's this thing that happened in the 60s where when the government became a military government and a completely undemocratic, you know, facade, that there was this need to have a facade, to have an artifice that the government was there to, you know, work for the people and then behind the scenes not do that.
Right.
And as that, as the internet really has sort of, you know, the sort of widespread dissemination of information has sort of taken over the culture in America, and we all sort of understand that there was a facade for the past 50 years or whatever, we've all kind of said like, this is fake. And then the people in the ruling class said, oh, okay, so we're just not going to pretend anymore.
Right.
And then I think that decaying of the mask appears to people who haven't been paying attention as a slide into fascism, or a downward spiral into a quote unquote authoritarianism, or evil big government crackdown. But right. that's not the case. It's always been this way. Just the facade you had before has slipped away, and they stopped trying to hold it up.
That's really an accurate way to look at it, because it's like, if you take Trump's presidency and Obama's presidency, it's like, what is Trump really doing differently in terms of like the powers he's wielding, or like the international kind of like standards he's enforcing? He's just doing it in a more mean way, and a more like crude way, and a more overtly racist way, whereas Obama was sort of like, we should listen to everyone and like give everyone a seat at the table before supporting cops and Israel and dropping bombs on countries anyway. But there was enough of the facade that people were like, well, I voted for this guy and he seems kind of sad about it, or he seems contrite about it, so maybe things are fine. And Trump is just sort of like revealing the like incredible amount of power that the president actually wields, and like made a lot of people realize how horrifying that
is.
That's why Trump was unpopular with the ruling classes, or at least the more liberal or quote unquote moderate side of them during his presidency. Wasn't because he wasn't making them richer. He absolutely was. It wasn't because he wasn't giving them more power. He absolutely was. But it was because at every step along the way, he was just reveling in the bald-facedness of it, the openness of the corruption and everything. And they were like, you can't do that. You're giving away the game. He was making what they considered to be like a tactical error.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And which is why I think that Obama is such a strange figure in American history, because he holds every which way to look at the sort of like Gödel Escherbach cube. You know what I mean? Right. Like, if you look at him from one direction, he represents everything, which is like he is at once the puppet master of the elites, and he's, sort of the because this is why like id poll breaks people's brains, because we had a black president, and
he didn't fix racism,
and he didn't fix anything, and he made everything worse, and he like I think that too, if you are on the quote unquote conservative side, he looks like this evil liar, which he is, and if you're on the liberal side, he looks like someone who failed, like this pathetic and sad figure.
But he's also simultaneously, in liberals' minds, the most progressive president of all time, and like a sensible moderate who was only stopped by the bad will of the Republicans.
Right, exactly. Like,
they sustain this like totally incompatible set of ideas and just pull out whichever one is convenient to defend his tenure as president at any given time. And it's like, he was the fucking deporter in chief. He dropped more drone bombs than anybody else. He dropped more than fucking Trump. Like,
And that's why he represents basically the most absurd, I think, the most absurd version of the facade, which was visually in the painting over of what was really happening, the most, progressive, or whatever sort of mask that we've ever worn, and doing the most evil stuff, just like the most heightened contradiction possible. And it broke. And right after that, it just fucking snapped and all of it fell away. And that's why Joe Biden is such a weird, like, not a president, because he just like isn't hiding anything. He doesn't need to exist. Mm-hmm.
he's a placeholder. He's just an echo of Obama. Like, that's all they want him to be.
So I think that Obama is Luigi, and then Trump to Obama is Waluigi, and then, or no, sorry, Trump to Obama is Wario,
and then
Joe Biden is Waluigi, where he's still clearly evil, but also he has the aspects of the already confused echo of Obama, and so now he just is like the synthesis of everything, but has no original.
Oh, interesting. See, I would think of it more maybe like Obama. Okay, Obama's Mario.
Okay.
Joe Biden is Luigi.
Okay.
And Trump is Wario, and then Waluigi is an as yet unnamed
synthesis,
Republican, apparently.
okay.
I don't think
maybe,
works,
maybe we haven't gotten to Waluigi yet.
you just love Waluigi too much.
I just love Waluigi too much. I can't accord him like a low place in this political Mario universe cosmology that we're building.
That's true. maybe Joe Biden is more of like a toad, where it's like, well, he's not Mario, but he's like, you know, he's his friend. He knows the princess. Like, maybe he's cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, then, I guess Josh Hawley, is he going like, to be Waluigi?
Trump is like King K. Rule. He's like from a different franchise, but he's hanging around. Like,
oh, yeah. When you're like, wow, this feels really incongruous. Like, I thought we were in the Mushroom Kingdom. Suddenly this guy came stomping in. His coloring is all different. Like, his art style is totally weird.
Well, yeah. Speaking of having rose-colored glasses for the Obama years, there's an article that Chris brought to our attention called Farewell Millennial Lifestyle Subsidy.
Oh my God.
That seems to indicate that during the early like venture capital tech bro Silicon Valley years, when all of these quote unquote startups like Uber and Lyft and DoorDash and shit were trying to establish their incredible monopolistic hold on the market, the rates that they were giving us to increase their chances of developing that market hold are supposed to be something that we now feel a deep and intense nostalgia for. Oh, I miss when an Uber across town was $16 instead of $50.
It is worse than that. Okay, this is called Farewell Millennial Lifestyle Subsidy. The price for Ubers, scooters, and Airbnb rentals is going up as tech companies aim for profitability. So what they're trying to imply here is that the irresponsibly low prices that they were giving us for their shitty product of, you know, basically in, you know, robot servitude of real human beings, the wage slavery that they've created, was a nice subsidy that they, the state, was giving us children for our lifestyle out of the goodness of their hearts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't a business move at all.
No, it was subsidizing our lavish needs.
Now listen, Timmy, we let you have the Minecraft server without taking it out of your allowance for a whole year, but you're 11 now, and I think it's time for you to start mowing the lawn and paying your fair share for the server. You know, we're not going to subsidize your Minecraft habits anymore.
This is such wildly fucking evil bullshit.
And this is supposed to be tech reporting. Like,
yeah, this is
somebody reporting
this
on this
opinion piece. this is the framing of the New York Times about something that's happening, which is that the tech companies that are, you know, sort of the Davos fucking child molesting evil bitches who are taking over the country are having to charge you more for their shitty things that they invented. That was, you know, no one's really talked about the role of the government in venture capital. Mm-hmm. Not very many media outlets talk about Peter Thiel's role and connections to the deep state, and all of this sort of neo manifest destiny of the West and Silicon Valley, and how it's becoming, you know, it's basically retaken over the land. Not important. What's important is that our new state is going to cost a lot more. Mm-hmm. And you should have been thankful for the ride that you got. like it was college.
Well, they're, they're trying to paint this as us having a golden years like our fucking parents did, or the like even older boomers before them, where it's like, remember when you could buy a house for $50,000 and live in it for the rest of your life? And I'm supposed to like be like, oh yeah, that's the same as like, remember when I could get a taxi across the city for, you know, less than 2 hours worth of my pay?
Remember when I could exploit a completely, you know, underpaid laborer and not talk to him and put in my AirPods for only $10, then he would take me across, like a rickshaw driver would take me across to my house. Like, it's fucking insane. Yeah. And it's like,
well, it really is a manifest destiny thing. Like you said, like it's all guised under like the, like anodyne, like capitalist creed of like, find a need and fill it. But what they don't tell you is that like the only markets that are growing right now are luxury markets and completely monopolized markets. Like there's no like starting up a mom and pop startup Uber with no venture capital and being like, oh yeah, I made Reddit for dogs. I think it's really going to take off, you know, because Reddit for dogs already exists. It's called Reddit.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a very interesting, like, flattening the way he like mentions a bunch of different kinds of startups, one of which is MoviePass, which I feel like maybe that's one where you could make an argument that like dumb rich people like wasted a bunch of money in a giveaway to, you know, poor people, because it was like, pay $10 per month and then you can see a movie every single day if you want to, that maybe each movie ticket costs like $15. Like, sure, I never did that, but if you did that, you can be like, wow, I'm nostalgic for that time when
Alex did.
Yeah, seeing movies was subsidized and I could see a lot of movies at once. But just being like, Uber used to be $10 and now it's $40. Well, and those were the golden years. And it's like, it's Uber is making lots of money from that. Yeah, it's not a subsidy. It is a capturing of the market.
It's a promo code. It's a sale. It's the same thing that regular retailers have been doing for a long time, just on a much grander scale, because these are emerging markets. And what emerging market means to VC investors is market that I can control entirely if I play my cards right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what's really disgusting about this, and what fucking makes me so mad about it, is that the framing of this, calling it a subsidy, isn't just, you know, letting off the hook these completely evil monopolists people, but what it does is it turns an entire consumerate, the entire, you know, I don't even want to say working class, because it's not exactly working class, it's like the entire people, the generation of people who have to buy now Ubers and Airbnbs to live, are now, you're allowed to treat them as if they are just kids, like infantiled, a completely infant consumerate who, if the wages or if the prices of this stuff has to go up, they can talk about it like we're making them eat their vegetables. Like, I know you don't love this. You know, this doesn't feel good, but you have to understand this is what's good for you. We know what's good for you. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
well, yeah, and they're not,
these are 40 year old people, you know, these are adults.
Yeah.
These are,
they're not posing this as a fucking economic issue either. Like they're going strictly generational on this, not even like generational wealth and like inherited class status. They're just like, well, the millennials aren't getting their Uncle Sam buyout for their little Uber Eats from Mickey D's anymore. I hope they can toughen it out and learn how to live a life outside the college dorm. It's like, I'm turning 30.
Asshole. I'm 35.
I should have a savings account with more than like a pittance in it, you know? And I don't have fucking anything. And then to top it all off, the fucking header animation for this whole article is like a little, like, I don't know, claymation millennial hipster dude with a unibrow, like shocked that he has to look at a paper bill.
Oh no, so much.
How do I rotate not a PDF?
Yeah, this guy also ends the article on a note of just being like, well, maybe it's there's a certain justice to it. Hiring a private driver to shuttle you across LA during rush hour should cost more than $16 if everyone in that transaction is being fairly compensated. And
oh,
it's like,
fuck off!
How?
Oh, my God.
God.
How do you mean every- don't you just reduce Prop 8 just happened?
Yeah, what do you
yeah,
you just made a law that you passed through Congress that means you don't have to pay anybody as a worker for you. What the fuck?
I know. Imagine being a fucking tech reporter and you're like, maybe it's finally things are on the up and up for Uber drivers. I've been hearing that as a group they're going to be doing pretty well now.
I'm going to this motherfucker's throat.
Beep that. Yeah, we should put something in. Yeah. I'm gonna pet this motherfucker's dog. Yeah. Yeah, Kevin Roos, we're coming for your ass.
I didn't even read their name, but I'm gonna be mad at them on Twitter today.
Oh yeah, yeah. You should get in that guy's mentions. I wonder how many followers he has.
Write him a strongly worded email.
the author of the article even wants to get glib with us. He wants to be like, I'll confess, I gleefully took part in this subsidized economy for years. My colleague Kara Swisher memorably called it assisted living for millennials.
I'm going to come to your house, Kevin Roos.
And then also, this author lists three services that they used that no other millennial in the history of the country has ever used. I got my laundry delivered by Washio, my house cleaned by Homejoy, and my car valet parked by Lux. I have never even fucking heard of those services.
Because Homejoy. I feel like he was getting like a home happy ending massage, and he was like, yeah, they cleaned my house with Homejoy.
I even bought a used car through a venture-backed startup called Beepy, which offered white glove service and mysteriously low prices.
What the fuck?
Which delivered the car
about?
To me wrapped in a giant bow like you see in TV commercials. Who fucking cares, you rich asshole? I bet you grew up riding horses and crashing luxury cars. Like, fuck you. I don't want to hear this shit from you ever.
Well, at least he is in his tweet of the article, he's being ratioed by someone who's like, do you think that it's the VCs we're subsidizing millennials or that businesses use cheap prices to attract customers? And he's like, oh, both. I think I made that clear in the article. But yeah, he hasn't been roasted by Bryn yet, so we'll see about that.
I think I pretty well wiped my ass in that article. I mean, covered my ass in that article.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a pretty good press release. I mean, unbiased article.
Oh my God. Why does this guy have so many followers?
Because
usually these people are like have 1,000 followers and nobody cares what they say, and like for whatever reason the New York Times, it's just like some New York Times person's friend who's like, you know, some big rich asshole's nephew who's like, why don't you write some columns or whatever? This guy has 148,000 followers.
He wrote a book too, Future Proof: 9 Rules for Humans in the Age of Automation.
I hate this kind of like any book that's one of those like quasi philosophical, like coffee table, huh, really make you think kind of books is guaranteed to be like half lies and half idiotic conjecture. Like there's never anything of worth in those books. Like 15 rules for the human with too many computers in their pocket. It's like rule one, remember to tie your fucking shoes and clean your room. It's like, oh great, this Jordan Peterson wrote this. Like
The first praise, like under the praise section, the first one is from fucking Andrew Yang, if that tells you
technocratic solution, like, oh, it's finally time we eat our fucking VC vegetables so the Saudi oil investors can get their money back. It's like, Jesus Christ. But this guy is causing a huge problem for our brains. And speaking of being one guy on the internet causing huge problems, there's an article in NPR from reporting on a major outage from Fastly, an internet service provider in London, that caused many, or maybe it's a URL host, I'm not actually sure. But anyway, they had a major outage that caused many of the world's top websites to go offline briefly this week, including the New York Times. Nobody uses that website. The Guardian, neither
more
do
like
they
bottom
use that
website.
Twitch and Reddit, which people do use, and the British government's homepage, which hasn't been updated since 1996.
It is so funny that all these like every article about this is like, oh yeah, the Independent went down, and then also the New York Times went down. It's like every fucking news website has to be like stroking the ego of every other news website and be like, yeah, all 50 people who log on to the Independent every day were very disappointed they couldn't read it today.
Yeah, get back to me when 9gag and Imgur go down, okay? Then we'll have a real catastrophe.
Then we'll have a problem.
Where else am I going to be able to look at my own memes from 4 years ago? They're not on my phone anymore, so.
Yeah, you got to find them somewhere.
So this says that it was one customer changing a setting was the reason all of those things
happened. Oh, yes. No, I rotated the PDF too fast and everything went down.
What That's setting?
The other thing. In this NPR article, they won't tell us what the setting is, mm-hmm. presumably because they don't want us to all try and go changing that setting again.
Yeah, they haven't fixed it yet.
It happen again. But they said the outage was broad and severe, and that the company identified, isolated, and disabled the problem after 49 minutes. Everyone in the company is like wringing their hands, trying to figure out why it wasn't detected during testing. And I can tell you why. It's because software development is a minefield and shit just breaks. There's mm-hmm. like a there's a fucking XKCD comic that I saw recently. I don't know how old the comic itself is, but it was like all modern digital infrastructure. And it had this like stack of blocks and rectangles and shit. And all the stuff up top was labeled. And then there was like kind of a foundation holding it up. And then way off on one side where everything was broken, there was just one little piece wedged in there, and it was like some, you know, Linux or SQL program one random dude in Sweden has been thanklessly maintaining since 1995. Mm-hmm. And it's like everything is a house. Like, if you think finance is a house of cards, digital infrastructure is a house of cards. People are Absolutely. Like, what if the sun explodes and eats the earth? I'm like, what if major ISPs stop being able to provide internet access on a random Tuesday? Like, that we would all be completely fucked.
Yeah, honestly, I think if we have anything in modern society that it's like where people are basically like wizards or like sorcerers, it's like people mm-hmm. doing like software and technology development and shit, because it's like they have their, you know, rules and they have arcane rituals and stuff that they follow and they hope that it works. But at the end of the day, they're just like, well, let's set this up and then pray that nothing bad happens, or really like let's expect something bad to happen because we know yeah. there's like going to be consequences to the shit.
Well, I mean, like, what is it, like fucking 80 or 90% of like foundational necessary like critical modern digital infrastructure is maintained by like a few dozen people around the world, most of whom are either furries, 4chan posters, or both, like
yeah.
And they get no thanks, you know, they get no respect. The, mm-hmm. the furries maintaining the internet's critical infrastructure, they get no respect.
They get no respect. Know?
Yeah, yeah.
Take my DeviantArt, please! But yeah, so the, you know, they even say in the article here from NPR, the incident highlighted how much of the global internet is dependent on a handful of behind the scenes companies like Fastly to provide vital infrastructure. And it's like, yeah, you know, this could all fucking fall apart at any second. And you know who's really gonna, I hope it does, because you know who's gonna be the most pissed off? The fucking crypto nerds.
Honestly, oh, yeah, yeah.
I should figure out how to permanently shut down the internet, or at least for a couple of months. That would be more effective than, you know, any sugar in a gas tank or sand in the cement of any Silicon Valley construction site.
Mm-hmm.
So is Fastly like not like a competitor to Amazon Web Services?
So Fastly, I was reading about this a little yesterday. It's something that they call a content delivery network, which I hadn't really heard of before. But the way okay. one article described it is basically like, if you're in like India and you want to read Reddit, you're not going to want to like wait for like the website, which is hosted in San Francisco, to load like every time you request something. So it kind of like makes copies of it that it like hosts more locally to you and then delivers it to you. And so that went okay. down, and it meant that like basically the like local version of the website that you were looking at was going down. And I think I don't know if that means that it's like a CDN acts as a middleman most of the time. And so if it's like going down, then you like lose the connection. But I did see someone say in like a Discord server, I think, that they were like, if you were on Twitch when the outage happened and watching, then it's like you could continue watching. But if you were like refresh the page, it would immediately go down, which I assume means like it sent a new request and then somewhere along the line, the CDN was down. And then it was like, oh, I don't right. know what's happening. Everything's down.
Because that makes sense. Because like, I don't think they would want to capture the like video stream in real time and then try and rebroadcast it on a delay. They right. probably mm-hmm. just give you like a cache of the web page, and then all of the live stuff they still have to hook you up to some kind of direct stream. But I'm not a fucking engineer, so I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure the engineers have like 2% more of an idea than you do, like what yeah. happened in this situation.
Well, I mean, that's the funny thing about this show that we have, is that like a shocking number of the people in the Discord are like, oh yeah, I work on like critical digital and hardware yeah, infrastructure. Yeah. Like, I work on a super collider. I work on a supercomputer. Like,
yeah,
you know who you are. Shouts out to all of you.
Yeah, you're probably crouching down in front of a server rack that basically controls our show at this this exact moment.
That's a weird thought. Like the feedback loop of just like working in a server farm that is like technically hosting our show sometimes and then broadcasting to your phone.
What about the fucking truck drivers who listen to this show who deliver the food to our grocery stores? It's all interconnected. It's not like we're all a little piece of God. Or what did Carl Sagan say? Not that.
Well, it's not like the show is actually in the transistors or whatever.
The files are in the computer.
We traced the show. It's coming from inside the show.
One thing I wanted to mention that's not on the bones is that Mr. Castillo in Peru.
Oh, hell yeah.
Functionally won.
Is it like officially declared yet? Or
No. Well, here's the thing is that people who study elections and can, you know, understand what's going on more than me because I'm very bad at math in general.
Sure.
Yeah. But, right. It appears it's a situation where it's impossible for the Fuji lady to win.
Mm-hmm.
She can't win now.
There's votes left to count that it's like, well, clearly these votes are not going to go to her. And there's not, even if like they swung to her 70%, like one of those kind of situations.
Like she can't win any normal country or any normal, and like if it was America and it was between Trump and Biden, they would have called it for Biden. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah.
Like, yes, of course, if Trump like got 100% of the votes that weren't counted, maybe, but like it's one of those situations where if there wasn't a huge incentive for America to not have this guy win, it would have been called by the vast majority of places, but it is not called yet. Mm-hmm. But Reuters is reporting things like, it's looking really close.
Everyone's saying how close it is. Yeah, they call it wafer thin. And it's like, I don't know, is a wafer the thinnest thing ever? I feel like it's like cookie thin.
This electoral margin is the body of Christ. Okay, and the CIA interference is the blood of Christ.
19 minutes ago, Reuters posted, Peru's socialists lead tight election as battle brews over result. So it's basically like, unless they kill him or, you know, do some insane fraud, Fujimori yesterday claimed fraud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was pulling a Trump, basically. Like, they're stealing my votes. Like,
and then The Guardian posted yesterday, Fujimori's fraud claims criticized as rivals' narrow lead widens. So it seems like at this point, he's got a wider lead than they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, this Financial Times headline from a week ago: Peru's elite in panic at prospect of hard left victory in presidential election. Oh, yeah. The left is hard, my friend. We are very hard.
I mean, it's like they're basically just going to swoop in with the OAS and be like, actually, Juan Guaido won the election.
President Juan Guaido of Peru.
Juanita Guaido, everybody. First female president of Peru. Incredible.
This is Juan Guaido in a wig.
Yeah.
So it's looking like that will happen, meaning that there will be a contiguous line of states between Venezuela and Peru and Bolivia with pretty socialist governments. Mm-hmm. And that can only be good. I'm starting to wonder what that will mean for what America will do.
Mm-hmm.
Insane. We're going to see the way they stoke sentiment against North Korea and like Iran and like Venezuela and stuff is going to get ramped up to be like Latin America is experiencing a red takeover.
Yeah.
Like they're going to reelect Lula in Brazil and he killed, 100 million Russians when he was commissar of the Soviet Union.
Yeah. People are like, what?
I was just going to mention that they're like also allowing Lula to run again in Brazil, which I find so interesting because it's like, if you really are like the corrupt elite and you're going to like, because he was put in jail basically on spurious charges, right? If you're going to do why not put him in jail for life on spurious? Like, they're fake anyway. Just make up better charges that will stick better.
Yeah, this is what we were talking about before. But, like, not everybody, like, the mask and the facade that is on, it's not off everywhere. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it almost feels like because there's so much scrutiny and because people know about sort of like all the coups in the past that the CIA has done, it's like their kind of hands are tied where it's like they could do it more blatantly, but then everyone would know what they were doing, and it would sort of be like, the more blatant you make your interference, like, the less you can pass it off. Because I feel like that's really what the CIA was like. They're obviously, their main goal was like destabilization and like no left-wing leaders, but like basically equally concurrent with that goal was like, they were like, we don't want anyone to be able to like trace this to us. We want it to be like, oh, rebel groups in the country took over the government. And it's like, now yeah. they can't do that because it's too obvious that it's them.
Right. But also,
it's literally like the Sopranos, like when like Tony's guys are coming up to him and they're like, we got some black kids to do it. It'll never get back to us.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
that's
yeah.
literally, it's the same fucking thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, I think one thing that I think people need to remember is that the ideological stance that the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the CIA and like the sort of actual, the things that became the deep state after the 60s, like, don't exist anymore in the same way. Like the guys who were like the consolidation of power publicly and privately, in the government and in corporations, like, has been far more dispersed by their own hand.
Right. Because they don't want it to be like any kind of like, you know, like smoking gun, smoking
room.
Not
even that, just because of the nature of capital and greed of like, you know, the way they created their state is that like, people can come and just like take over.
Elon Musk can just be like, we'll coup whoever we want.
Because they never wrote into the laws, like, you know, Alan Dulles wasn't like, only me and my friends get to have money and power. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, it was a thing that they were doing at the time, but all of these people are dead. And so like, the machine is just going, but it's like, I don't know if there's anybody in the CIA now who's like, this is just as important as the Middle East, as the, as China, as Russia, like on all sides, they're sort of like, you know, well, all of this is really important. We want to keep our, you know, our stance as the global power. They're like, well, the Latin Americans aren't going to be global power. They probably think of Latin Americans as small potatoes.
So, so you're telling me that these CIA entrepreneurs use their enterprising spirit to move fast and break things across the world, and it had unforeseen market consequences that we now have to deal with? Okay, okay, I can understand this now that I've kind of got it in NYT language.
Yeah. yeah. So it's a. You know, I'm not trying to push a baffling, bumbling CIA narrative, but I am trying to say that like the ideological mechanisms aren't necessarily at their full power anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and also
they'll
like,
do evil shit; they don't care.
Well, and just because like the CIA or whatever like has been or and still is an effectively evil or like effective and effective at being evil organization doesn't mean that they're in command of all of the consequences of their actions. Like, they are playing with fire. They're playing with like geopolitics and like shit that involves the lives of millions and billions of fucking people. And it's like, they don't have to bumble to make mistakes. They don't have to bumble for shit to come back around and bite them in the ass. Like, they're just playing on such a grand scale of things that like, yeah, unless they are really the most meritocratically competent people in the world, they're going to fuck it up. Like, it's just inevitable.
Yeah.
Even if their intentions were good, which they're not.
But they absolutely are not.
But even if they were, they would still fuck it up.
Yeah.
So hopefully they don't just do a dumb strong arm, you know, murder Castillo in his sleep kind of thing.
Right.
But we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, because it sort of feels like
it seems like he's going to be the president.
Yeah. And it seems like their old sort of strategies are just like, I feel like places like especially Venezuela, Bolivia, like I'm sure Peru, like these countries are all like very cognizant of their own histories and like the history of the CIA. Yeah. In the region. And it's like, you can imagine that the CIA could do like the exact same plans that worked before. And this time, like, they won't work because people will like understand how to like root out obvious like CIA malfeasance in their country. Yeah. Like
Peruvian exiles.
Yeah. Yeah. Like arrest people who are like forming rebel groups and be like, this is obviously like the CIA fomenting some kind of coup. Right.
Oh, we're anti-Castillo exiles. We're not, you know, we're not at the CIA.
We have nothing to do with the CIA.
Yeah. So speaking of people fighting back, Ohio guys are now suing Google.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So the state attorney general, Dave Yost, the state attorney general for Ohio, possibly the last person you would expect to have a good take on something,
yeah,
has decided that Google serving up its own services at the top of search results is the last straw. And that this constitutes unfair market manipulation, and has come to the amazing conclusion, which is incidentally correct, that Google should be regulated and nationalized like a utility service.
Okay, wait a minute. You're telling me that a guy looking for beef jerky and pipe tobacco was annoyed so badly by advertisements at the top of his Google search that he got to, you know what? Google should be state-owned.
Yep. Look, they're serving me ads for turkey jerky when I look up beef jerky. This is unacceptable. I want it to be the first thing I see is beef jerky and then a whole page of beef jerky, not this other crap. This is unacceptable.
Look, right. Look, he's just like bringing reporters over to his like shitty laptop. Like, look, when I type in grizzly dip, it comes up skull. I don't want fucking skull. It says ad, but that doesn't mean I want to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this honestly is something that I feel like in the past like few years, because for a long time, there was like Google ads where it's like if you Google like flights or hotels or, you know, like a lot of things where it's like, obviously some service wants you to use theirs specifically. You get like one of the results is like an ad for that thing. But now it feels like, here's a perfect example. I tried Googling beef jerky and you got a few beef jerkies, but then one of them is mushroom jerky. You know, now I don't need meat, so I'd be happy with mushroom jerky. But it seems insane to serve an ad that is like absolutely not the thing that you search for, and you see that before right. like the actual search results. And it feels like that's like a lot of Google searches now. Like you search for something and they're just like five ads that are kind of related to that topic.
I mean, but I love that, like, this is just like a boomer guy with a hair up his ass who happens to be in a position of power. And he's saying something that, like, I don't even think, reading the article, it doesn't even seem like he wants to fully nationalize it. He wants it to be, like, subject to regulation and, like, under the direct authority of a utilities commission. So it wouldn't be nationalized, but it would be treated like cable TV, trash hauling, airlines, and casinos.
Mm-hmm. Like the MTA.
Yeah, and then you have a Boston University law professor, Tiffany Lee, saying, like, it sounds like another attempt to limit the power of big tech without paying attention to the actual law. Google's not a public utility any more than the Yellow Pages telephone book is. Google as a company, this is where it gets juicy, has First Amendment rights to protection for its speech.
No.
Algorithmic ranking and sorting of search results can be considered Google speech. Attempting to limit that will run into constitutional law problems. I love the specificity of will run into constitutional law problems.
That's did what Google I write this quote Boston for her?
No, that's fucking insane. There's no decision that supports that businesses have free speech.
I mean, there is, unfortunately. They're treated like citizens of the United States. It's like one of the worst rulings that we have on the books.
No, but that's spending money is speech. That's like technically different, I think.
Oh, just like doing
business. I thought that it was pretty broad. I thought that it granted like private companies like universally the same free speech rules that it grants private citizens.
Oh, you might be right. I haven't read this Citizens United decision in a while. I'm also not a lawyer.
More like Citizens Untied, right? More like our citizens decided for us. They're babifying our constitutional rights, people. They're turning us into children. I mean, I sound like a fucking boomer, but this is one of those points where like the boomer hair up your ass is like telling you something important. Like they really are. Like
absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, this is the problem is like the solution is never going to be good enough. Google shouldn't exist. The concept of indexing, like, it's weird how I feel like because at the time, people just didn't understand the sort of importance of the internet. But if you try to explain to somebody now, like, okay, you know, the internet, like, who do you think should index it? And like, who do you think should have control over, like, how you find stuff on the internet? It's like, well,
I know the answer to this. It's Randall Monroe, the XKCD guy.
Yeah,
he would do a good job.
Sergey Brin should have it. You know, it's like no one would be like a private company should do that. you would do like, wait, why don't we do it like Wikipedia where we all do it or something, or, mm-hmm, you know, right, which is, you know, sort of the stupid dream of Brynn, the internet.
Okay, if people didn't make money indexing the internet, they wouldn't do it. Okay. I've never seen someone do free labor on the internet out of a passion for something.
Yeah.
That simply doesn't happen.
Isn't the entire way the internet got made.
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know. It's just like the inclination is absolutely correct that the Google should not be allowed to do anything it does. Just like Amazon shouldn't be allowed to basically control all of the internet.
Exactly. But
by
then,
having
it
on its servers.
We have to steal this fight from Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost, because I just don't trust him. He's had the idea, okay? He's the ideas guy. We can let him be the ideas guy on this one.
But he doesn't need to be the builder.
We as the public need to handle the carrying out, the execution of this.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think we all need to go to Ohio and explain to him that, you know, we got into this problem by letting a couple of people's try to solve the problem, and they tried to make a lot of money off of it. So he needs to give his problem over to the internet.
Right. Over to Randall Monroe and other webcomic creators.
Yeah.
Such as Jeff Jock, just because he has good takes.
The guy who started Improv Everywhere needs to take this over.
Yeah. We need to do a pantless subway ride directly to Google's offices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's been the episode. Thanks so much for listening to BP Bledis. Appreciate you. If you'd like to hear more of this show, go to our Patreon at patreon.com/BP Bledis. Follow us on Twitter at WeedPod. It's a fun time. Listen to my other show, Generation Loss. Listen to John's other show, Work Stoppage. Listen to watch me and Chris's other show on Mean CV, Left Trigger. Mm-hmm. Check
and on
that
Twitch,
out.
Twitch, pretty fun.
Yeah. And then we've got Mids posting on Facebook and the Discord. And we will see you next time.
Goodbye.
Love you.
Beep it beeping. Thank you.